Hello, everyone. Jack here again with another episode of the Generalist Podcast. I'm your host, Jack Goodman, or Jack the Generalist. And today, I have Steven. Introduce yourself.
Hello. Hello. Well, I'm Steven, as you can see. I'm a senior VFX artist for about two years now, officially. And I've been working in the industry since pretty much... since what, 2018? I think it was 8th of January 2018. I remember it very clearly because I remember like the offer letter for the tech artist intern. It was the 8th. So yeah, I've been around the industry for quite a while already, and I'm currently in Montreal. I've been there ever since 2016, and I've been dabbing in the VFX field since then, pretty much. And I originally come from French Polynesia. It's way back in the South Pacific, if you know Tahiti, Bora Bora. Mm-hmm. That's the two island names that most people are familiar with. You know, like in the XXX movie, the first one, you see the end is Bora Bora.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's where I come from.
I need to Google that on the side. Yeah, I think I've never heard about it, but I also didn't know that it's a French. Is it like territory or how does that work?
It's French Polynesia. Yeah.
Polynesia. Okay. I also can't.
It says French Polynesia because it's the French part of Polynesia that was colonized by the French. Mm. Other parts were colonized more by the Anglophones, or like, you know, Hawaii, New Zealand.
Okay. I think it's extremely beautiful there, right? Pora Pora.
It is.
Yeah.
I think you interviewed like my friend Coraline Chari while back.
Yeah.
She's from Pora Pora.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. We're both from the same country.
Yeah, it's extremely beautiful. Like I think I've talked about going there. And then I looked it up, it was like super expensive or something.
Well, to be honest, it's less expensive now because new flight companies manage like to get a hold of some, you know, how do you call that? Part de marché, I don't know what you call that. Slices of the cake, you know, of the international flight, because you have two type of flight. You have the international, and then you have like the domestic flight. Yes, that's how it's called, domestic flight. Because there's so many islands, then we can travel them all with boats. So it's doable. Like in some islands, we do that. It's called taxi boats, or you use the ferry, for example.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's a domestic travel on flight.
Okay, and so it's common to have like private jets, not jets, but like private planes.
Not private jets, but you know, like small airplanes.
Yeah.
Like about 50 people or something, or less. Okay. I don't exactly remember the amount of people we can get.
So it's common
there
to learn how to fly in a way, more common than like in
especially like when you're kids, because if you're from the islands, you have a tendency like, at some point, like when you finish the primary school, you have to go to the secondary school.
Yeah.
And usually it's either going through a boat or a plane,
you know,
toward the nearest island that has the installation to handle secondary schools.
Wow. What a different life, right? Like, where do you live now? I mean, not like the specific
Montreal.
Montreal. How is it?
Montreal.
How would you say it's different to Montreal? Like, just
this is the total opposite.
It's cold, right? It's not hot.
Yeah. Well, it depends. Like, it can be very cold, but it can be extremely hot as well.
Yeah.
It's very different, like, because you have all the temperature, I'd say, compared to tropical islands where you're just different. You have a set of different rules, weather-wise, let's say.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily want to deal with the tropical bad side, let's say, you know, like mosquitoes, insects in general.
Yeah.
The humidity and the typhoons.
Oh yeah.
So it can be pretty beautiful, but you know, the grass is always greener on the other side.
Absolutely.
You just have to deal with different set of rules depending on where you are, and then you just choose what fits for you.
How would you say like growing up there has shaped you and prepared you for like career or life generally in Montreal?
Well, to be flexible in every aspect of life. My situation is a bit exceptional, I'd say, because my family originally come from Vanuatu, New Hebrides. I think it's the former name was New Hebrides. Now it's called Vanuatu. There was a war at some point. I think it's called the Coconut War. If you Google it, like, you're gonna. It's like the Vietnam of South Pacific.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, and basically, if I remember well, don't quote me on that. There was a resource war, like when you have like superpower, like France or the English. It's always the same tale. They're trying to go to other countries to do their bullshit.
Yeah,
they try to mine, to mine resources, and then they destroy the environment.
Yeah.
And they destroyed the environment, and the people of that just didn't like that.
Yeah,
which is perfectly normal. And then
exactly, you know, incubators. Then, like, who's gonna like that? Imagine if something like that happened today. Like, this is just not gonna go right.
It continues to happen. It's just another form of it. To be honest, the older I get, the more I see. The more you look at history, the more. You see patterns, you see the same thing, just worded differently.
Labeled differently, Yeah, I see that.
It's the same old shit.
The same old shit, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to VFX. Like, what, why VFX? Let's say, why VFX?
Because it's cool.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's as simple as that.
But it's a very specific skill. Like, how did you land on that skill? There's always a journey.
It took a couple of months because to figure out what I actually wanted to do. Usually, when I don't know what I want to do, I just like try to draw like mentally. How do you call that? Like a kind of box of things I like because I don't know specifically what I like and do I really want to make a job out of it.
Yeah.
So I just put things in there. Like, I like this. I like that. I like that. Okay. What can I do with this? Okay. I like video games. What kind of jobs I'm aware of at that time I can do? At that time, it was tester, programmer, and maybe animator. That's pretty much all I was aware of. For the jobs available. Then I went through the whole process, like, you know, like to come in Montreal, Canada and Montreal specifically, because I did the work to pinpoint where would be the best place to invest my career and to develop my career.
Yeah.
And I had like the choice between France and Canada, specifically Montreal. France would have been easier like on the paper side because I'm French from I have the French nationality, so paper-wise, easy peasy. But the schools were expensive and a bit nebulous on what they were trying to offer, and then there weren't many studios, I'd say, besides Ubisoft, maybe, that were known to do to offer jobs. So I was like, okay, maybe I'm going to check Canada, and then I saw there was... after like just researching like the game I love to play, like Splinter Cells, especially Chaos Theory, was made in Montreal. And then the more I dig into it, the more Montreal came out of it, of my research. So I'm like, okay, so there's a pattern here.
Yeah.
So I'm doing my research, and then I went there and then found a school that would allow me like to be... Well, I pretty much use it as a foothold, like to get my feet. In this part of the world. And yeah, I did the condensed training for a year. And usually that's the kind of training you do in 3 years, but it was condensed in one, less than one, 11 months pretty much. even a little bit less. So I chose the 3D modeling course, and the other course was about level design, game design, which I was not familiar with at all. And starting the second semester, I switched from 3D modeling to 3D to level design and game design because I noticed that there were less hours, for one. And there were a few courses in the 3D modeling I just didn't vibe with. Like drawing on a canvas, like you have a model and you have to draw. I'm like, I don't care about that. I don't want to do that. That's not what I signed up for. So I just skedaddled to the other side. And that's where I met my best friend now, pretty much brother now.
Awesome.
Yeah. And when I switched to the second semester, this is where we started like to have like the VFX course with my mentor, Stefan Nipton. Mm-hmm. He's not a VFX artist anymore. He switched to something totally different that fits more of his.
Was he like film VFX or like games VFX?
Yeah, he used to because he's like one of the OGs. Like he did because they weren't the game the real time VFX because it's pretty recent.
Yep.
From what I understand and from what I see.
Yeah.
And so before that, you have like film, movies, anime, and then he worked in those, and then eventually he landed on the real time VFX side, and. Right from the start, he showed us the demo reel from Chengang, if I remember well. And it blew me away, pretty much. And that's, you know, love at first sight.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be with you. I want you in my life. That's my relationship with your real-time VFX.
Awesome. Awesome. We should leave a link for that, actually, just for people to see it later. But I'll ask you to sum up the links later. What an interesting, like, it's always like whenever I talk to real-time VFX artists, it's always an exploration phase of like, what do I like and what don't I not like, right? Like, it's always an exploration. And then we all kind of land on something that, like real-time VFX, where it's a little bit of everything. Is that something you were attracted to when it came to real time?
What specifically, like the
different aspects, like the different disciplinaries, right? Like you mentioned before we started recording, you said you're a specialized generalist, right?
Yeah. It's the fact there's so much like how do you call that, chapters, if I can put it like that. You're not like tied to one specific thing, like in 3D modeling, for example. You props modeling and that's it. I guess you have character modeling, you have monster modeling and stuff, but it's not as wide as real-time VFX, I would say. It's very broad. Like the spectrum is very large. You know, you have the art side and then you have the technical side.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole spectrum in between. And throughout my career, I noticed that a lot of people were finding either end of the spectrum or very much in between, or they were both.
Yeah. And how do you balance that, like, throughout your career? Like, obviously, I've seen your work, and it's, especially on Dragon Age, it's just, like, incredible work. And I wanted to ask, like, how was it to balance to get to that level? What did it take? Did it take blood, the sweat, and tears? Like, what did you do?
Well, a lot of tears, I'd say. a lot of like scratching my head because, you know, I come from a very different background.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with video games. I was a teacher and then I did a lot of stuff that has no correlation in any way with the digital stuff besides playing video games.
Yeah.
That's all. That's the only common thing there was.
Yeah.
How to balance that? Well,
how to gain knowledge, I guess, is the, like, especially if you come from a background where you didn't have any technical background. Because, like, I have real-time VFX artists that have studied game dev, for example, or know programming as a background. I rarely find people like you that are on the same level like you are and at the same time have not started in the technical part. So this question has a lot of, I'm really like waiting for the answer because I am in the same boat.
Well, I'm doing just like you. I'm asking questions.
Yeah.
You have to be curious. You have to show that you want it. It's going to be, maybe sound a bit corny, but that's called like, in French, we call it la niaque. In English, it's called like the drive.
Yeah.
You know, when you really want something, you gotta work through it.
Yeah.
You gotta ask yourself the right questions. You ask questions not only to people, you ask questions to yourself. What do I actually want to do with my life? And once you figure out that, okay, I want to do this, and I got the answer to that question when I started, like when I saw that demo reel I just talked to you about, like the chain gang VFX.
Yeah.
Once that question was answered, the only question left is how.
How, yeah.
Yeah. And then you ask those questions to the, and in my case, it was my mentor, my very first mentor, Stefan Nipton. I asked him how, like, how do you do this? And it's, and I repeated that question, how do you do this? 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 And what fascinated me was the whole process of, you know, like creating assets, usually that are outside of the game engine, usually, you know, like DCCs, like Blenders, 3D modeling software. And now my favorite software at the moment, it's Illugen.
Yeah.
I call it the asset maker because it's like Substance and a Blender and other stuff blended all together in one package, which I love. But yeah, it's the fact that you make a lot of part outside. It's like when you're manufacturing a car or something, you know.
Yeah,
it's never all everything made in one place. It's a lot of part that are made elsewhere, and then they are assembled. In our case, they're assembled in the game engine to make something cool.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Actually, it's such a good analogy to look at it as well, right? Because like, if your effects are a car, you also need to make sure that all aspects of that car is working properly.
Yeah.
And it's just this overwhelming, like even if you're an experienced VFX artist, it comes every time, right?
Where it's like, is this going to work? To always be aware that, you know, like, for example, like if a piece is not rightly made for a car, for example, there are risks, like, for example, like, not just to not fit in, there is like dangers that can happen. Yeah. I don't know. The car can just stop working in the middle of the road and can kill people. Well, it's not as dramatic.
But like it could kill the game in the sense of like, that effect will be placed 70 times in one level, and players, if you didn't test it, the players will be pissed, and then they might ask for a refund or something, you know.
Yeah, and there's a specific example I like to use to illustrate that point. It's mostly like the scaling part, you know, because different engines have different scaling unit.
Yeah.
Unreal, for example, have centimeters, and Frostbite, if I remember well, it's in meters. And the DCCs can be in centimeters, or I don't remember if it 3ds Max or Blender have the same unit value, but your unit values have to match the one from the game engine. Otherwise, you're gonna find yourself with, you know, like, you know, in Blender, for example, or Maya, you have a mesh that appears to be at the right scale, but once we import it, you see nothing. And then you think that there's a import problem, but actually, just like your stuff is too small because during the export, the unit value wasn't matching the one from the engine. Wow. So that's something you have to be aware of.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a beginner thing, but if you were not taught properly and you're jumping too early. I mean, what do you advise people to when it comes to things they don't know, you know? How do you prepare? Yeah. What's a mindset to prepare someone for the unknown?
I remember that because I asked, what do you know about what you don't know? Because that's one of my shortcomings on the technical side, I'd say, because I knew I lacked some knowledge on the technical side. I knew I needed to make up for it, like through math. But I didn't know what specifically.
Yeah.
But that's a problem, because when you don't know what you don't know, more often than not, you just waste your time because you try some things and then it's actually pointless because it just doesn't apply to you.
Mm.
So again, it's not really a solution, I'd say, but it's again about asking the right questions. And if you don't ask the right question, just ask question at some point. It's a numbers game. You're going to ask one question that's actually like the good one.
Mm.
You ask different people because different people have different point of views and different solutions to bring to the table. And then, so what I like to do is like I have a box and then I have a set of
tools,
answers, yeah, of pointers, and then I try one of them like a checklist. Okay, it's not for me. Try another solution. Well, it's not for me. Check that one. Maybe I'm gonna keep that one.
Yeah,
and then I try another thing, and then. Oh, yeah, okay, that's the thing I want.
Mm.
And yeah, that's usually how I proceed when I don't know something and I want to figure out what I don't know so I can figure out what you know.
Here's another question. Like, how much did backward engineering play a role in your learning?
I'd say it. You know, when you, I guess when you break down an effect that was already made by someone else and then you try to figure out how.
I mean, it could go all the way from just watching a video and trying to break it down all the way to, like, I don't know, looking at your friend's work and maybe ask them if they could send you the project. And if they agree, then you could just like look into how they broke things down. That could also be backward engineering.
Yeah, before that, I would have told you maybe half of the solution, but I would say now it's more of a third, I'd say, because the way an effect was made is very contingent to its context.
Mm.
What I mean by that is, depending on the company, depending on what effect you're looking at, depending on the game you're working on,
yeah,
the way it's made, it just probably not going to fit what you're trying to do because they had like to deal with constraints and guidelines that just don't align with what you're working on right now.
Mm.
For example, you have like games that use VATS a lot. Then you're like, okay, cool, that's nice. But then you realize in your production you can't use that because for whatever reason, because it's a VR game, so you're very much constrained on the performance side.
Yeah.
Whatever. So it's very contextual, I'd say. I don't think I'm going to be able to provide you to specific answer per se, because that's how I had to deal with me not being familiar at all with the working in video games and computer at all.
Mm-hmm.
At least in that field, there's no one answer to be said.
Yeah,
you have like to train your mind to be flexible on that front, like,
yeah,
that there's no one specific rule.
Yeah,
there's a rule for each situation, for a different set of context.
And it, like, you really need that mindset of being flexible and also approachable in a way, right? You don't want to not burn bridges, but in a sense, you kind of... Like, when you're on a new team, let's say, or on a new project, on a new team, you kind of need to build the bridges because they don't exist. Yeah. And because you will find yourself often not asking the questions, like you mentioned. And they will give you an answer. But if that is the answer that you need, is up to you, I guess, to experiment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the easiest answer is backward engineering. Other times, the easiest answer is question. But to sum it up, is you need to spread a wide net, almost like fishing, right? You need to catch as much fish as possible. Those are your answers. And then you need to pick the best quality out of those. But to pick the best quality, you need to kind of run through each one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of sums it up a little bit. Because like you said, each game is novel. Each team is novel.
pipelines are different, peoples are different, productions are different.
I think what I notice in game development so far is that no one claims that they know it all.
And if they do, they're full of shit.
Yeah, exactly. In a way, I have not yet worked with someone that claims that they know it all.
You probably don't want to work with them, like, because you have this aspect as well. Because we work with people, and then you're bound to have conflicts at some point in your career, and it's part of the process. And that's also how you grow as a professional, as a person. Which happened to me, and which happened to a lot of people. And if it didn't happen to you yet, well, it just didn't happen to you yet. That's all. Don't dread it. You gotta welcome like the challenge that comes with those, because there's a lot to gain with that. Even it can be scary, you know, because a lot of people, especially in fields like those, I see a lot of people that are introverts. I call them nerds. It's just a friendly jab. Because I'm a nerd as well, you know, but I'm also like on the other side of the fence, where I'm also a bit more outgoing, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get both point of view.
Yeah, that's mostly our job in a way, right? We kind of need to lean on both parts, but never too much on one side. Like, you don't want to be the real-time VFX artist who is just like literally... I mean, no disrespect to anybody, but you don't want to be the VFX artist that just draws frame by frame and then... export those things and tell the tech team, okay, now you you do it now. I want it to look like this. All right. It's like, cool. Why did we hire you?
That to Julian, our VFX artist, junior VFX artist on the team. That's pretty much his job at the moment, to just draw texture and fluid books. I'm like, hello, Julian.
It's like 10% of the actual effect, you know?
Yeah. Most of the work is, in my experience, is... once the asset making process is done, you know, when you build your library enough, like, to be able to do pretty much everything you need for your game, well, that's the fun part comes around, where you have Jira's coming around, and then you have a list of things to do, and then you have to do them for one, and then you have to integrate those. Integration part is something that's I don't see very much talked about.
No, it's not talked about. It's also not taught anywhere in a VFX, in a real-time VFX school, actually.
Yeah, which is a shame, because that's pretty much the meat of our job, the integration part.
Yep.
Well, granted, like, there's also like a DND part where, you know, like, some workflows or way of things are integrated or tied to like proprietary like technology, so you don't necessarily want to divulge them. But it's just not taught at all, or very little, in my opinion. And that's I think that's a shame.
Yeah, I think if I sums it up, like, the way I work is ideation, creation, variation, implementation, testing, and polishing. Those are the phases.
Yeah, I think I made like a graph or something that very similar to what you're saying, like a few years ago.
I think
I put it on rotanvfx.com at some point. I made like a schematic like this.
It's almost like four people, you know, figuring out how a wheel works, but no one actually like made the guide of how to make a wheel, you know? Like, I'm sure not one person figured out how the wheel works. Like, I'm sure multicultural or multi-civilization have figured out how a wheel works, you know? But
I guess once someone figure out everything, I think it's going to be a good time to move on from the VFX field, I guess.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you figured it all out, I mean, you're removing the fun out of it, so I'm just going to do something
but
else, I guess.
Hey, listen, honestly, I think there are VFX artists that are working right now that know it all, but they are so busy from project to project that they wouldn't even have time to, like, not just teach, but to, like, write down how exactly they work, because it's just like this encyclopedia of knowledge. And I think it would be a shame if they go to retirement and there's nothing done for other people to, like, get familiar with. Because here's the thing, VFX is a job that is made by demand. Like,
there's a lot of demand and very few people that actually
I mean, those
that they can fill the positions.
Like those who put the pillars of VFX for games were already having a job when they asked, when they got asked to do it. That's how I see it. They did not go to school and you know, studied real-time VFX as a topic. No, they put the pillars as they're working. So it's a job that was formed by the necessity of the tech. And I don't think they were just like people who had the knowledge and were like, you know what, I can do it. They kind of figured it out on the job. That's why there's little to no documentation. In my opinion, like at least there's a lot to be done in terms of like the two major factors of what makes an effect work. First, implementation. I don't see a lot of work in like showing how something is properly implemented or how to tackle each and every effect in terms of implementation.
Yeah, anything you see integrated like in some way or another is just something that's never gonna be doable in a real production. So I'm like,
yeah.
And it's also good for showing some stuff on the screen, but not really representative of what's going on in real time.
I think that is because each team, like again, each team is different. There might be practices. Like it's, let's say it's team dependent or project and team dependent. So there's not really one answer, but I would really like love it if there was a guideline on like, usually if it is an effect, it's a status effect is implemented using this type of logic. And someone just explains that like the foundation of that logic. And then by the end of that, the teacher or the person can say, review with your tech lead if that is the proper way to do it. Because, you know, code is complicated. Each team codes in a different way. You don't want to be like the one that is putting that's breaking the logic of the game, creating more bugs at the same time. That's a huge
endeavor to do as well. Like, you know, like that's a lot to ask, like to maybe one person or two to make. So this should be like a common endeavor or something. Or if one person has to do it, it's gonna take up all his or her time.
Yeah.
So usually I see what you're saying, and that's actually what I'm doing right now, but more contained within my own team. You know, by writing documentation.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, on things that I saw and that actually worked, you know, I mentioned patterns, you know, you have things that always appear in every video games.
Yep.
You know, like
status
like, for
effect.
Example, insects, status effect, flocks of birds or something.
Bullet trails, rays, impact.
Bullet trails, impact, this kind of thing. Things that can be standardized.
Yeah,
let's say.
Yeah, so that's the word.
That's
I think.
Where the confluence pages are very useful. But then again, it's very contingent to your project and to your team. So, and it's hard sometimes that you share this knowledge because you know you have realities as well. Because people like after work, they don't want to hear about work after that.
Yeah.
They have other things to do. For example, I love my motorcycles.
Oh yeah,
I like to ride. I like to spend some time in family, dating, this kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's a lot. You have to deal with the reality of it. Like you know, there's the things we actually want to do. And then there's the reality of it. I'm not saying that we're not gonna get there someday. It's just gonna take a while. I think
it's gonna take a while. It's also gonna take a lot of organization and a lot of money. Like you need to also make money out of making such thing, right? And I think there will be eventually a lot of money in that education section of VFX.
Well, I guess it's already like happening. I'd say The money part, I saw a lot of courses now that are very tailored to VFX artists now.
Yeah.
And the price point is like, oh, on some courses I saw, I'm like,
yeah. I see what you're doing.
I get it.
It's too early. I think there's too much demand for the supply. And that's where you can put the prices up a little bit. But I'm looking forward for a future where there's no monopoly of like one education platform that offers everything. I'm looking forward for a future where affordability is more into the essence of it, and not just like looking at it as a pure business, but also looking at it. I mean, what I'm trying to say is maybe a real like a platform where it feels like from real time VFX artists to real time VFX artists, or to future real time VFX artists, let's say, and not just, you know, almost like executive feeling of a platform that has some VFX course.
Yeah, because the main goal is to make money,
exactly,
and not exactly like, you know,
value
to actually make you the VFX that you want to be, the VFX artist you want to be.
Yeah, I
resonate with that because I was a teacher for a while, and then my whole family pretty much is in the education since over 50 years, so I understand like the sentiment, and then the fact that you have to deal with executives that don't have like the good of the pupils in mind,
or the passion for the job in a sense. Yeah. You know, they see the numbers behind the potential, you know.
Yeah, not necessarily like passion, because I was in the education, my father and my aunt and me, we weren't particularly like passionate about it, but we understood that it was for the good of the kids, and that you don't necessarily have to like the job, but doing a good job should be like wanting people to succeed, giving them the tools to succeed, to be their own person, should be the primary goal. Should be, because
it
I know
should it be,
should be, and then you have like what it is. You know?
And also, like I have the feeling that right now a lot of real time VFX artists that got taught from these executive based courses,
they're clones.
They're clones, first of all. There's no creative freedom. They feel it, though. They know it. And they land... They're so hungry for like a platform that actually teaches them the proper way.
Mm.
Almost like a job type of platform.
Yeah, you know, like the realities of production, like the other aspect of the job that are not necessarily related to the technical part.
Mm.
We talk a lot of the technical part, but we also... But what I heard when I hear all the time from my peers and my seniors is that they want more people that are more focused on the art aspect of it rather than the technical aspect.
Yeah.
And not just the art as well, more like the human aspect of it.
Yeah.
Communication part, like this, which is very important.
Someone like you would really like to work with just because of who they are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell this all the time on the podcast, and I think people got bored of it, but listen, like, if you're the best VFX artist on this planet and you're an asshole, dude, you're not going to land a job, not in 5 years, not in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some, not VFX artists, but I've seen some people online, without mentioning names, but like they would literally post the rejection letter that they've got daily and posted on Blue Sky, Twitter, whatever, and not just rage about it, but almost like make fun of the company in a way. And the thing is for me, and this is a general advice maybe for people, if you got rejected, it's not personal. It's purely business based. Even if it was personal, professionally, business again, it's unacceptable. But
because if you react that way, like you just prove their point.
Exactly.
Yeah. You just prove that you're unemployable. Like,
exactly.
Like, because if you're going to talk like this, just like that, like how are you going to actually behave in a real production? It's like when you're rejected by a girl and then you have the guy that says, oh, you're ugly anyway.
Yeah. I mean, sour grapes. Yeah.
I'm like... we all know that's very cringe.
Here's the thing, like I've seen those people like posting those rejection letters on Discord or on Twitter, and I'm like, I get those too, but you don't see me.
I got my fair share
it.
Of those.
You know what I mean? Like I'm sure the best artists in the industry have gotten rejection letters, but you don't take the email with the name of the company, with the name of the person. and post it. Because guess what? That person will see it. They'll be like, all right, cool. Nice. You do me dirty, I'll do you dirty. The industry is very small.
Yeah.
The industry is so small. It's in the thousands, like worldwide, not in the hundreds of thousands, right? Mm. So people will talk. And you, I swear to you, I know that person that posts about like their rejection letters. 3 years without a job.
Well,
they have quite the following, though.
Yeah.
But no job. Sad.
Quite the following doesn't really mean shit.
Exactly. I just you get into this echo chamber of, I'm getting likes, I'm getting follows from this. So people like that content. And it's like, yeah, maybe because you share the frustration, but to normalize sharing rejection letters and shitting on other companies professionally, unacceptable.
Yeah, there's a whole business of it as well, like the negativity farming, I guess we can call it that way,
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a whole other topic we can talk about, because that's something that's very present. And I'm glad I took up like the hobby. Well, it's not a hobby anymore. It's part of my life now. It's part of me. It's doing motorcycle.
Yeah.
But just doing something else other than, staying behind your screen and just watch negativity and then let it affect your life.
Yeah.
Not letting you get some sleep or eating properly. I mean, I bullshit.
I've seen my fair share of people that do this day and night, right? While they're eating. Mm. While they're sleeping, they're still thinking about it.
Doom scrolling, I think they call that.
Nah, then you have the doom scrolling through the Discord server, and they would still talk about how shitty it is and how there's no jobs and everything. It's fine to talk about this, but to talk about it in a text form and traceable way is really damaging. Not for you, but also for people, because here's the thing about text. Here's the thing about reading something. Mm. We are taught since we're kids, when we were in school, when you read something, that is the absolute truth. When you're reading a book, you're reading. The act of reading, of informing yourself while reading, we're taught not to question it. Although we should question it. So when we're reading Discord messages of someone that we think are cool and their art is cool and they're saying there's no jobs, guys. No point in applying. Maybe they have a hidden motive to cap the competition, so they have more chances, right? There's always stuff
that
like
whole
that.
Mind game like this.
Play mind games, exactly.
And what to interrupt this, you have to come in like, I like to be like the one that kicks the hornet's nest or something like this, the ant's nest or something like this, and just coming around and just kicking and just asking, says who.
Exactly. I love that.
Who said that?
Yeah.
Who are you that say that?
Yeah. I mean. Yeah. It's such a good way to just be skeptical about not just people, text form.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think about a lot when I browse Reddit, I like to play a game. I'm like, how much of this is farming? Karma farming. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, you browse maybe 10 posts and 5 of them are bots. They're just farming. Yeah. So next time they post or they comment, they seem legit. When humans in crowds, they're almost like a herd in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel if you put people together in a stadium and start chanting a name, they will start chanting with you. Yeah. I feel like we as crowds, we just want to be liked, right? As people. So it becomes an echo chamber in a way. Like, oh yeah, the sky is falling, the industry is breaking apart, there are no jobs, and at the same time, that same person goes to the job website and starts applying for all the jobs.
Yeah.
And in that way, they have more chances than the other people who just give up now, right?
I met a few of those throughout my career. Some that actually abandoned their team at school just to be able to get my job. Actually, that's a topic I can talk about more in private.
I got you.
Don't want to mention name.
But like,
I very despise these kind of people, and I don't hide my sentiment about it.
I love that.
I'm a bit cheeky as well, which landed me in quite a few trouble. But I really don't give a shit. I think we need more people like me in that regard, because I think there's too much, like, we have to be nice, blah, 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 meaning at some point when you ask some questions, well, because everybody is so sensitive about the topic, and no one end up talking at all. No conversation, no, you know, it's very black and white.
Yeah.
It's very bipolar. There's no nuances.
Yeah.
Although, to illustrate my what I'm trying to say is like, I think a week or two ago, I think they're going to recognize me. I'm going to be famous a bit for that. But I started like a conversation about AI about 2 weeks ago, because there was a tool I noticed, like, the, you know, like, it's a 3D AI stuff where they scan like a picture of it and then they generate like a mesh out of it.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting, like, to just like as a pre-visualization.
Yeah,
you're trying to work on a portal, but if you have no mesh of it, or you're trying to find the right model, but you can't find it, or you find it, but you have to pay for it, or it's free and it doesn't look like the thing you want, you're trying to make. And I thought it was cool just for that, you know, nothing more.
Yeah.
And then I just, what do you guys think about it? And then it's
boom.
Especially the AI stuff, and then you get called that, like, oh, if you use AI, I'm going to question integrity as a VFX artist. I'm like, dude, chill. Wow. I just ask what you think about it, not, you know, judging people.
Yeah.
We just ask questions.
That's pointing all. Fingers.
And that's where.
Stuff,
yeah.
Here's the thing.
I just went to.
Like, I talked to a computer scientist on the topic of AI, and she was like, it's funny because AI was researched for like a huge portion of like computer science. And now, like, even AI, legit AI researchers, right, that are trying to make the best for humanity in terms of cancer, in terms of like whatever, they're using AI right now. But just because they have AI on their LinkedIn, they would be attacked, right? They would be torn apart. Here's my thing about AI. Listen, if you're a printing company that used to hire designers and artists, and you're using AI because of its lack of copyrighted material to make t-shirts more than ever, to make, I don't know, card games more than ever, to make whatever it is, you know, you're not paying artists, you're making more margin, you're making more profit. That is completely BS and needs to be regulated.
Yeah, that's a shitty thing to do.
Yes,
it needs. I think we can all agree on that. It's the, like I said, the word I want people that to keep in mind is nuances.
Yeah,
you know, like the conversation we have right now.
Yeah,
nuances. You know, AI is a tool for me at the end of the day, and I can understand that. Like, people can be like very emotional about it because it has a real impact on them. For example,
absolutely,
some people are just selling art like to make money out of it.
Yeah,
that's a shitty thing to do.
Yeah,
but you know, doesn't mean you have like to completely put that aside and then ostracize like any people that has like just the mention of it.
Yeah,
that's stupid in my opinion.
You
just turn people that were actually on your side against you.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
In a way, yes. And I think like there is ethical way to use AI, and there should be an ethical. There should be regulations. That's what I'm advocating for. And one of the regulations I really would like to see in the future is context. Who is using which tool, right? Yeah. So if you're a printing company, right, and you're using AI without hiring artists, you're making more profits, then you have to pay more taxes that artists can take and feed off, right? If you're an artist and you're using AI, that should be by no means or form against the artist. Because more than anyone, if ethically, more than anyone, artists that are using generative AI should be the one in the front, not the executives, not the printing companies. Those should not be using anything, right? They should be maybe using what's ethical for them. If you're an executive, you want to use generative AI.
I mean, you're asking too much from companies that look for to make money, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But like that, I don't know, like car companies, right? They wanted to make companies. Mm-hmm. So making seatbelt did not make any sense for them. But now it's like, imagine a car without a seatbelt. That is unacceptable. Right? So I feel like everything comes into like steps, or by time you would we will realize as human beings, okay, we're doing a lot of damage now, right? Especially with the environmental context of AI. Like, if you look into the statistics of you, if each one of us who's using online AI, right, is using a local AI, how much that would have changed the environmental impact to like a different degree. And I talked to the computer scientist a little bit about this, and it was she mentioned about like the environmental impact of it and how it AI, like in the form of ChatGPT and DeepSeek, has existed for decades, right? But just the fact that people did not know how to install it on their PC, right? And all what happened with ChatGPT is that they made it in a form of a website. And then it exploded to the way.
Well, you know more about it than me.
Sorry about that. I mean, it's a huge topic these days, right? And I think we need to take not only the emotions away, but we also need to have a more nuanced conversation about it, like you said. Like, let's invite the experts and not those LinkedIn accounts that are talking about AI, you know?
So I got my dog. He's he's like, hey.
It's enough now.
Who are you talking to?
Tom is like, it's enough now, buddy.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, like you said, and like I mentioned before as well, like it's the lack of nuances.
The bipolar,
Yeah, it's always you're right or wrong. It's always black and white. Maybe you're both right. Maybe you're both wrong. Mm. Maybe you're right at that time. Maybe you're wrong at that time.
Also, I don't want to know, like, those people who are really attacking people whenever it comes to AI, how much they use AI in secret.
There's that, and there's also, you know, like, a lot of people, but, well, man, I mean, they're human. Like, sometimes as well, like, when you write or speak online, it's not really representative of what you really are, you know, as a person, you know, most of the time, because it's very dry, in my opinion, when you write, when you type something on a form, and it's easy, like, to take it the wrong way, especially when you're very literal in your way of writing. So that's why it's good, like, to have, like, formats like this, you know, with podcasts and all, interviews, because you actually talk to people, you can, you know, check their reaction, like, the tone of the voice.
Yeah, facial expression.
Like, it's very important.
Yeah, and because it's easy to just sit behind a screen, look at avatars and not real names, and, you know, offend someone, I guess. I would not do it. I would seriously not do it, because I am so afraid of, like, not offending, but I'm so afraid of destroying someone's day, you know? Because I know the impact of having a really negative conversation to my life. Right.
Yeah.
So if I see someone that is being aggressive or in text or whatever, I don't block, but I just, that's it. Conversation is done. I'm not gonna think about it. They showed their colors. If people show you who they are the first time, trust them. Right. Just trust them. Don't. Because I used to be the person that would apologize to things that I should not even apologize to. But I just didn't want the noise anymore. I'd be like, it's too noisy. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess people...
I'm the opposite.
You're the opposite?
I'm like, what should I apologize just because you got your feelings hurt? I mean,
yeah,
I get it. Sometimes it's a bit too much.
Yeah.
And I make that mistake sometimes. But sometimes I'm just doing it intentionally, like, to know where I can go so that I know the limits, so that limits I do not cross after that.
Yeah, I think professionally it makes a lot of sense, especially if you're on a project, not to yes-men everything, because the game or the project suffers, right? If it is a chat, I feel like on a Discord, it doesn't have that, you know, that nuance of, like, there's something going to fail if I don't interact. I don't interact. Like, professionally, nothing bad is going to happen, so I just decide to just keep it as it is. If they think they're right... Like, who am I to change their mind, right? It's like freedom of speech in a way for me.
Yeah. There's some point, like, some discussion going on as well internally. Like, I just tune out sometimes. I'm like,
Exactly.
If you say so.
Exactly. If you say so. Or maybe you're right. You know, maybe you're right. Like, I don't want to admit that I'm completely right. Like, maybe you're right. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we are human as well. You know, we can be petty too. Like, I can be very petty sometimes. But you know, you have to be honest about it. Like, I like to wear my heart on my sleeve.
Yeah, man. And it takes a lot of courage to do that, honestly, because you're risking the rejection of that, right?
Yeah, yeah. But you gotta embrace what you're afraid of. Mm. That's what courage is about.
Courage. Yeah.
You have to do things that you're afraid of, that you risk having your ego hurt. And God, my ego is why I hurt like so many times in personal life and professionally. Because, for example, that's a topic I think a lot of people can resonate with, and that followed me around since the start is my lack of proficiency in the technical side.
Yeah,
which is still to that day something I'm trying to overcome. I'm not trying. I'm doing it. I'm taking concrete steps to overcome the shortcomings.
Yeah,
and that's something like I think people should embrace more and not be ashamed that much, because relative of productions, like, you're not you don't actually need like to be the most proficient in any side of the job, but you have to be able to do the job in a specific time constraints and quality constraints as well. As long as you're able to do the job, in my opinion, you're good.
Yeah. And sometimes do the job could also mean take on a risk of learning a new skill that you might have not known before. Meaning, like you said.
And that's probably not related to the technical side of the job at all.
Yeah. It could be that they say, hey, we're in the beginning of the interview, right? We're looking into it's really important for us to hire someone that has experience in XYZ, right? And you say, listen, I'll be honest with you, transparency, you're not taking any risks if you be honest with them, right? So you could tell them, honestly, I've never heard about this term before, but I can look it up and I can take direction. If you can frame it in that way, that A, you're honest, B, you're telling them exactly what you're going to do, you're not waiting for them to give you tasks, you're not a task monkey. They see ownership, they see honesty and communication. And if they don't go with you, fine enough. You're not putting too much pressure on yourself either. Yeah.
It goes a long way. Like, doing, like, not the same bullshit, not being a jerk, not, you know, not being honest. It takes a lot of courage, like, to do that, to be, I don't know what's the word, to be straightforward, let's say, to admit your shortcomings, to admit that you don't know, but that to show that you're willing to do the work to get it done.
All right. Thank you so much. We're reaching the last 3 minutes. Is there something you would like to add, promote, or give advice for? I'm hearing the dog. The dog is hungry.
Ah, not just hungry, like that's his poopy time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then let's wrap it up. Let's wrap it up for Tom.
Yeah. Well, no special mention to that. Just nuance, I'd say, would be the word. Having a bit more nuances in the job and how you talk to your team in general. Perfect. That's something that lacks on the internet, I think.
All right.
Nuances.
That is a great conversation to have. Steven, thank you so much. I'll just head to the viewers and say thank you so much for watching. I'll see you in the next one. And we both say bye to you. We'll still talk, Steven, a little bit. All right. Goodbye, everybody.